Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, world. It's a new day, and thank you for kicking it off with us right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio. Melissa, Seth, and James here with you at 9.04 on the clock. We got good things lined up for you today. We are going to get into in a little bit our Denny Wright stories, good stories of the day, all those kind of things coming up for you, and plenty more. I want to let you know that tomorrow on the show, Terry Johns will be sitting in with us, CEO of your United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties. Looking forward to that. And in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by Madison and our friends from the Southwood County Humane Society with our Pet of the Week.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, she better bring something in.
Yeah.
James will be angry.
Really hoping. Really hoping. Looking forward to seeing Madison and the gang tomorrow. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're going to get into some entertainment news. And to kick things off, Sabrina is a hero. Melissa Joan Hart, popularly known as Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yes, indeed.
Helped guide kids to safety after the deadly shooting at the Covenant School in Nashville on Monday.
Really?
Her kids attend a school nearby, and she and her husband were on their way there for conferences when it happened. In an emotional Instagram video, she said, quote, "We helped a class of kindergartners across a busy highway. They were climbing out of the woods, and they were trying to escape the shooter situation at their school. So we helped all these tiny little kids across the road and get to their teachers. We helped a mom reunite with her children." She added, quote, "I just don't know what to say anymore. Enough is enough. And just prayer for the families." Melissa noted that this is her second experience with a school shooting because her family used to live in Connecticut, where the kids went to school not far from Sandy Hook Elementary.
Wow.
Their three 9-year-old kids, three adults, were killed in the Nashville attack along with the shooter. Don't know how many people saw the stats. 20 million AR-15s are stored around the country. Sales since the Newton massacre, just since the Newton massacre in 2012, roughly 11 billion.
Jeez.
11 billion. That's that price. I'm mentioning that price because that's the price of our children. That's how much kids cost to these companies.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put a price on human life. I thought you couldn't. Apparently, $11 billion. Yep. That's what you can put on it.
Mm-hmm.
We are a country who cannot protect our children. Think of that statement. Let that sit in. I hope that irritates the living daylights out of you. I hope you're angry at me right now. I hope you're mad. Good. Good. You should be. Because this is on all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I got no segue, and I did all not right. mean to do that. I apologize. No, I don't apologize. I don't apologize.
Don't apologize.
I don't take it back.
Him.
I don't apologize at all. At all. No. You don't like it? Too bad. I'm sorry. I don't like kids dying. You know, that's me.
Right.
I'm one of those weird people.
And I don't like senators saying, "Well, we can't fix the problem." well, certainly you can't if you don't try.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. They don't. Why would they want to fix the problem when it's not affecting them? They
yep.
don't. They don't care until
no.
it affects them, and they don't.
He puts his kids in homeschool.
Yeah.
They don't care.
If you think that half of these people care about you, I've got a bridge in San Francisco to sell you.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves doesn't have a lot to say in John Wick Chapter 4. The Wall Street Journal actually counted, and Keanu only says about 380 words throughout the movie, which is almost 3 hours long, by the way. About 10% of his words are spoken in the movie's 2.5-minute trailer, and he says more in that trailer than he does in the first 25 minutes of the film. And here's Keanu's longest dialogue: "You and I left a good life behind a long time ago, my friend." It's actually a really well-delivered line.
But that's crazy.
But that's the longest one?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was Keanu's call. Director Chad Stoshelik says, quote, "Mr. Reeves stripped out roughly half the dialogue written for his character in the initial script." And I could not stress enough how brave that was on his part, I think. Brave on the director and the writers to agree with him on this, because I've seen John Wick 4. And those four movies, it's one of the best action anthologies ever. Ever.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredible. It's an actual story. It's not just a bunch of explosions and all this stuff. Like, you actually see a character arc. You see a whole storyline here. Some amazing performances. And Keanu Reeves in this one, like, his character shouldn't be giving you Shakespeare. He's John Wick. He's the baddest man on the planet. He's an assassin. How many assassins do you know that can sit down and, like, it isn't the bad guy, like the bad guy in every James Bond movie who has to sit there and tell Bond how he's going to take over the world.
Yeah, right.
While Bond is getting away. Like, you know, as a side note, why didn't any of these villains ever talk to each other? Like, if they had shared notes, like, how did you get caught? Well, I was telling Bond what I did, and you too? Oh, well, we got to stop doing that. None of these guys ever
stop
went
the next
guy,
stop
though. Who's going to be the next guy?
Yeah, right.
Probably a penguin.
I like that. I enjoy those movies, so I admit that, and I admit that I think that it's I think it's in Keanu Reeves' favor
yep.
to do something like this with this role.
I like the idea of remembering that acting is not just dialogue.
Yeah,
right.
Especially with movies, a motion picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
mm-hmm.
just about what you're saying; it's about how you do it. And that I would think actually adds a fun and interesting challenge to an actor, having to do it without dialogue. You got to do it with your body language. You got to do it with your eyes and your face and your movements mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. That sounds like an interesting challenge.
Sorry, Mel.
I was just gonna say, I had a director once tell me you can act with your back.
Yes.
Very cool.
If you have your back to the audience and you hear and the you get a cue line that is a tense line and your back tenses up.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Mm-hmm. There's yeah. so many things that we can do with our bodies as far as that goes. And mm-hmm. I mentioned this to my buddy Will, the stand-up comedian out in California, because I knew he was going to see it. And it's like, his performance reminds me of silent film. His performance in this reminds me of that, and Will laughed at me, of course, and made some jokes that I can't say on the air. He told me last night, he's like, no, I get it. No, I see. I see what you mean and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
There's something really cool and old school to me about it, while it's also some of the more crazy action scenes I've ever seen in my life.
I'm sure, yes. Yeah.
The mayor of Allentown has a bone to pick with Billy Joel.
Uh-oh.
Billy Joel's Allentown doesn't exactly celebrate Allentown, Pennsylvania, since it's about a steel mill closing and devastating the area. And 40 years later, some residents are tired of it. They include Allentown Mayor Matt Turek, who was only 7 when the song came out. He says, quote, it's so wrong. It's like, I don't know how it felt in 82, but it doesn't feel like that now. Like, I honestly have a hard time saying it's getting hard to say, like, it's hard to stay. It's hard to leave. I don't know. He okay. says the word like a lot of times for a mayor.
Millennial mayor.
Yeah, apparently. I love the song. It's one of my favorite Billy Joel songs.
Yeah, it's a great tune.
I don't know. How many people would know what Allentown, Pennsylvania is without this song?
Exactly.
I say take what you can get from it and everything. I don't know.
I think they're taking it a little bit too literally because he chose Allentown as the it could have been any town in the 80s.
It was a metaphor for what was going on.
Yeah,
steel
factories
mills
moving factories. Out of town. Yes. It doesn't have to be, steel. But he speaks about that specifically. But it could be any number of towns anywhere in the United States during the 80s when things were moving out of town, going out overseas.
Do you remember how bent out of shape people got about the movie Gung Ho? With Michael Keaton, and it was all about a factory moving stuff to another country and all that and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where this is. I hope that I like to hear Billy Joel respond to this.
Yeah,
one. I just want to hear what he had to say about it.
Probably, huh? What are you talking about?
I was very curious to hear what you two would have to say about this one, so I was looking forward to talking about it with you. X-Files is getting a reboot.
Oh, no.
What?
Now, before you cringe, it is going to be in the hands of Black Panther director Ryan Coogler.
Huh?
So
that may turn Seth around.
Yeah, I think so. I think it might turn some others around too. X-Files creator Chris Carter says, quote, he's got his work cut out for him because we covered so much territory.
Too much territory.
This may upset some people. Carter also said the new version will have, quote, a diverse cast. There are no other details yet. In addition to the Black Panther movies, Coogler has also directed Creed and Judas and the Black Messiah, Space Jam, A New Legacy. Judas and the Black Messiah, one of the better movies to come out in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Incredible movie. The Black Panther movies are very well done.
Yep.
So I don't know. I would say that there's some hope on this one, but if you are a diehard fan of like Mulder and Scully, maybe not as much, because I doubt that we're going to see those two in this one.
No, they've pretty much said they're done with the characters,
yeah.
And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
They put in their time. they've done all they want. No, the reason I was kind of surprised, though, is that seems like an odd project for Ryan Coogler.
Yes.
But then again, he has picked some interesting, you know, the Space Jam was a good example of him picking interesting projects that you wouldn't necessarily think, considering, you know, the action stuff that he's done and you know, and the fighting, the boxing movies and all that. So, yeah, now I am intrigued because he's a talent and I'm curious to see where he'd go with it.
To no surprise to either of you, every movie set or TV set that I've been on, I have driven the director crazy because I will
really
ask, I will ask them a million questions. I want to know everything. I want I want all their knowledge. And talking to directors over the years, one of the things that I've learned is they're no different than actors in being typed. And many directors are very okay. A lot more directors are okay with it than actors are being typed. Oh, I'm Michael Bay, and I'm just going to do action movies my whole career. I'm good. I'm a billionaire.
Yeah,
I'm okay.
Right. Yeah.
Like you know. But other directors, they like Coogler here, and I'm not. I'm only making this assumption because of his body of work,
mm-hmm.
and now what he's going to do with the X-Files thing. It's very similar to like Jordan Peele and a lot of that stuff. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Don't want to be boxed in.
Yes. I showed I could do comedy. Now I'm going to show I could do this. I've shown that I could mm-hmm. do action movies. Now I'm going to show I could do this. I get it as an actor. I just didn't think directors until I started working with them. More professional directors. That was their something they worried about.
Interesting.
So I wonder if that's playing into this for him.
Well,
and I like the idea of a very diverse cast.
Yeah. What's the harm?
Adds a lot of interest.
Exactly.
And the subject matter, I think, kind of calls for it.
Well, this is something that, speaking of Jordan Peele, I heard him talking about that a lot of people, it seems to be like far-fetched to them that they don't understand. You know, black people like sci-fi too.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's black nerds, you know? I mean, there's like, there's plenty of people. Like, there's Latin nerds. It's not like this stuff is just for one particular group or anything
no.
like that. I think that we've seen that as, like, that's what society has shown us mm-hmm. in TV shows and movies and everything. The quote-unquote nerd, the geek, is a white kid who, you know, this and this and this
right.
about them and everything. That's rarely the case, though. I mean, there's plenty of that out there.
It speaks to a great wide audience of people. And think about like this. So Ryan Coogler grows up, watches The X-Files, really likes it, something that he really is into and anything like that. But now if he gets the chance to do the show himself – well, why not do like an FBI agent that's black?
Yeah.
Why not? Like to see, you know, it's like I get to see myself then. Before it was just, you know, these two people, which I'm sure he wasn't looking at them like, yeah, these two white people. Yeah, he was looking at these two characters,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But there's absolutely nothing, you know, what's the difference of putting, you know, when if it's the same, making one a different race or ethnic group?
Yeah, I mean, they're not trying to like redo X-Files. They're trying to reimagine it. They're trying to have a new version of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do the same old thing. If they had had two ethnic people in the original roles, they'd probably have two different people in this one.
Exactly.
Two white people or something like that.
And the original series ended in, what, 2001?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they revived it for two more seasons in, what, 2016, 2018?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So there's been a lapse of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
When I was a fan of X-Files. I didn't mm-hmm. see every episode, but I watched it pretty much to the end.
Oh, yeah.
And enjoyed it. But when I first started watching it, I actually thought it was going to be like a sci-fi Law and Order. Like where the it's kind of more about the case than it is about the actors or
mm-hmm.
the characters, and that the characters change every once in a while over the years, like
right.
Law and Order. Like, you know, you had a different lead detective, you had a little a different, you know, head DA and all that. I thought that that's what X-Files was going to be. I was wrong, obviously, but I was happily wrong. I thought the show mm-hmm. was really good, but it's just an extension of that thought, I think, in some ways.
Right. It became and as the show went along, I think it became more about Scully, Mulder, their relationship and all that mm-hmm. stuff. Oh, and then we're going to put some monsters in here too, you know, and some aliens.
Yeah,
it became more about them, I think, than anything else. But
yeah, more of a drama. Almost.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that when Chris Carter was originally trying to sell and work X-Files, it was more of the case and
yes.
the producers and Fox and everything kind of leaned it. Well, they got, you can't have a man and woman on screen and not have them fall in love or not have a love conflict. How dare you?
Yeah.
Which we need actually more of that.
Absolutely.
It was one of the few times where will they, won't they, and, you know, the spoiler alert and them, you know, end up the way it did and everything.
Yep.
I was actually okay with it, even though I usually hate that.
Yeah, right.
Because I think we need more of that in society. The more of the Parks and Recs thing, the Amy and Ron just being friends. You never watched an episode of Parks and Recs and wonder, will they, won't they?
Yeah, right.
You know, they were just friends. They're, you know, we can have men and women as friends in TV and movies and stuff.
So let me geek out more and say, I think we have seen that recently in the relationship in Marvel movies, the relationship with Hawkeye and Black Widow.
Oh, yeah. Big
because time. They were not romantic at all. They were very close to each other, and they had a very, very close relationship, but it wasn't a romantic one. It was just, it was more than that. It was something about, you know, saving each other's lives and that kind of thing. So
Hulk and Black Widow, too.
Yeah, that's true.
A little bit of a similar one there.
And I have to say, speaking from my perspective, I really appreciate that they are starting to push that narrative a little bit. Because guess what? It's really hard, at least for me personally, speaking from my experience, to be a woman and have male friends. Because there's a lot of societal pressures that come at you. And
yeah, that's
I
true.
Have been personally attacked before for having a friendship. And it's kind of awful.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad. Yeah, that's very sad. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that, Melissa.
Glad they're doing this in Hollywood because, you know what, maybe it'll help.
I hope so.
Maybe.
And I also got to say that that sadness is a segue into our final entertainment story, and we don't have to spend a ton of time on this one because I think that the national media has already taken on the story and it's gotten legs and everything, but it's a That Ain't Right story, if you ask me. This is my opinion. Just speaking for myself. Nobody else, not Civic, not anything else. The Wisconsin school district that banned the Miley Cyrus Dolly Parton duet Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mess with Dolly. Don't you mess with Dolly. There's a lot of layers to this one, but do not mess with Dolly Parton.
Seems like not a good choice. Yeah.
No.
Where are you in your life that you're going against something that Dolly Parton is doing? Especially when it involves kids.
I mean,
this woman, like,
poor first graders are so crushed.
I don't want to take anything from the educators over there or anything like that in the work that they are doing. We appreciate our educators and our teachers and our principals and all of this. Dolly Parton, what she has done for kids, may trump what they have done. It could. At the very least, it's neck and neck.
Yeah.
come on.
Well, if you're talking about numbers. I mean, she has definitely impacted a larger number than some of these administrators and teachers.
What she's been able to do, the work that she's been able to do with her Imagination Library and so many other things and the efforts that she's put in and everything, my God, I don't know. The idea of protecting your kids from something that is a part of everyday society. Would you like your kid to be in a bubble, and when they turn 18 and they're a grown adult and can be out on their own, all of a sudden they go into the world and they have no idea about any of this stuff? Like, none of it? You think that's a better world for them? Then you're not. The job of a parent is not to shelter our children and keep them in bubble wrap and not let them out until they're 18. Our job is to teach them this world and to teach them how to fly in this world, and so that one day they can fly out of that nest and fly on their own, as hard as that is for us to let them do that. As difficult as it is, my kids are in their 20s and it's hard for me to think about.
right.
But that's our job. Mm-hmm. We're not doing our job as adults in society if we are not letting kids experience the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing as, well, you know what? I'm not letting my kids have any technology. My kids, I'm going to keep the phone out of their hand, the tablet out of their hand, none of it. Okay, great intention. Kid gets outside. That's wonderful. Kid turns 18. Hey, guess what, kid? The whole world is tech.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and figure that out. And you wonder why your kid is flipping burgers. Because that's all that's open for them. You didn't help them. You didn't prepare them right. Whether you like it or not, it's not about that. It's not about the opinions of these things so much as it is these things exist in our society. And when you hold them from your children, you are not doing your job as a parent, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're doing them a disservice. How is that going to help them at all as they move along?
You're not getting rid of these things.
No.
There's no putting the genie back in the bottle. I don't know where this thought process is coming from, that if we just ignore it, it'll go away or something like that. Have you not seen the community? It's pretty proud. Pretty proud. Not going to be hidden. Not going quiet. Not going quiet into that night. And not going away.
I can just tell you from personal experience, growing up very sheltered and then coming out into the real world, it's not easy.
Hmm.
It's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of life lessons you learn later in, you know, your early 20s, early 30s even, that you were like, why didn't I know this?
Mm.
earlier because there are so many things I would not have done in my life.
Right.
You know, in hindsight, looking back, obviously, you can't control that. But I just, I feel and I hurt for any of the children that are growing up in these sheltered bubbles because it's not okay. It's just not okay.
Right. Great perspective, Melissa.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing
that.
I did want to mention Morning Magazine because we have some special guests joining us throughout the week this week. We, of course, are going to be spending some time in Morning Magazine over the next couple of days and into next week, focusing on the candidates for the Wisconsin Rapids School Board and candidates for the Wood County Circuit Court Branch 4 Judge.
Yes.
We're going to be doing that, kicking off today. Now, these interviews are going to be each 10 to 15 minutes apiece. We give every candidate the same amount of time, and as I learned from the great Carl Hilke, similar questions for every candidate. Wanted to keep them very simple. I do want to send a big shout-out to the League of Women Voters and our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. Did great work on this, and I worked with them a little bit with my questions and everything. So greatly appreciate all the work that they did and all these candidates that got back to Pam so quickly so that we could get this this ball rolling and stuff.
There's a lot going on. We're getting close to Election Day here.
Yes, indeed.
Less than a week.
Really a big shout out to Pam Hilke and the great scheduling that she does week in and week out with this one. Greatly appreciate it, Pam. We are going to kick things off today. Kathy Stebbins Hintz is going to join us as our first candidate. And she, of course, is a candidate for the Wisconsin Rapids School Board. After that, we will, about 10:15, 10:20, talk with Craig Lambert, candidate for Wood County Circuit Court Branch 4 Judge. And then after we're done talking with Craig, about 10:35-ish or somewhere around there, Mike Deary, candidate for Wisconsin Rapids School Board, will join us. We'll probably spend the remainder of the time opening up the phone lines. I want to know what you guys think. I want to know what you think of, what you think are the more pressing issues in our community and the things that you would like to see addressed. You have an opportunity to call right up live and direct late in the Morning Magazine to talk about that with me. We'll have
Very
some fun
cool.
with that. We'll
Very
have some
cool.
good.
Awesome.
For right now, let's go ahead and get to Melissa's news. Let's go ahead and get you informed with the best in the business right here, our own Melissa Kay. We'll be back with more fun. I want to come back and talk driving. I want to talk about the cities with the worst and best drivers.
Oh, good.
Also have some interesting stats on that one from Nationwide.com, the insurance company. So
interesting.
We'll get into all of that coming up after Mel's news right here on The Morning Show at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Welcome back to The Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. We hope you're having a good one out there, everybody. No one's to blame. That's it.
No one ever is to blame.
No one is ever to blame. That's
Howard Jones was right.
It turns out. We hope you're having a good one out there, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. Melissa, Seth, and James here with you, and let's talk a little driving.
All right, let's do it.
There's a new list of the U.S. cities with the worst drivers, which seems like it should include every city. actually, I have they have this wrong in the article. It shouldn't include every city. It should include every city that you are not in.
That's right.
No matter what state you are in, the neighboring state has the worst drivers. If you are in Michigan, the worst drivers are Wisconsin. If you're in Wisconsin, the worst drivers are Illinois. If you're in Illinois, I mean, it just keeps going.
Yep, you got it.
The analysts looked at this stuff like traffic fatalities, alcohol-related crashes, insurance premiums, uninsured drivers, and even things like weather and the number of auto repair shops per capita. That's a pretty good consensus.
Interesting,
there.
Yeah.
In the end, Jacksonville, Florida was named the worst for the city with the worst drivers. Every one of my Florida friends complain about traffic.
Yep.
Every single one of them.
Yep. Yep.
That land was not meant to do to build like they can't. The infrastructure there literally cannot withstand up there. They're building everything up because they cannot build anything on the ground.
No, because it's either swamp. Or it's right next to the ocean. Or, this is not stable ground that they're building on. They have to get down deep in order to get to the bedrock there.
It's a genuine concern with the lack of environmentalism in some places in there, and especially when it comes to the Everglades and everything, that half of Florida could be in the ocean in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's not far-fetched. Like when we were kids, that would sound like a sci-fi movie. Now, I mean, it doesn't take a big search engine to show you that there's a likelihood of that. Louisville, Kentucky came in second, followed by Orlando, Tampa, Nashville, Memphis, Riverside, California, New Orleans, Birmingham, Alabama, and Sacramento.
Okay.
So, California in the south.
Yeah. Although L.A. didn't make it.
I'm a little surprised.
L.A. wasn't on that list? Or is it just a given anymore? Because people, I'll tell people who complain about driving in L.A. Kind of thing.
I'll tell you, I am not surprised by that at all.
No. There were several Florida cities in there. Again, I mean, you got Orlando. I mean, and there's reasons for some of it. Orlando, of course, is because of the parks and everything that's around there. I'm a little surprised. Sacramento.
Yeah, interesting.
You don't usually think of that, but again, it is the capital of a state. That's probably going to happen too.
Well, and think of the factors that they included too: the number of car repair places.
True. True. Mm-hmm. Well, in Florida, I always thought that you just, you know, parked your car on the freeway and waited for someone to come repair it or steal everything off of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Eventually, it'll be gone.
Yeah.
Does seem like one way to do it.
I'm telling you, you're in the deep south when you're driving on the freeway and you see lots of cars abandoned on the side of the road. Yes.
So true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to look up and see, because the website's not working for me here, but I'm trying to see where Wisconsin and where other states rank in this list, if they have a complete list.
Yeah, right.
Just having a hard time getting it to pull up for me here, because, of course, I need it to work now.
Now, James.
I can guarantee that Wisconsin ranks higher than Illinois. We're better drivers in Wisconsin.
Oh, well played. Well
Very
played.
Very good, yes. but not as good as Minnesota. No, I'm just kidding.
I'll let you have that one, but I bet we're better than South Dakota, because that's where I got in a car accident. It wasn't my fault.
Oh, okay. Mm.
On a serious note, new data from Nationwide Insurance shows that it's getting more dangerous on the roads these days. Mm. 86% of drivers rate their own driving as very good or excellent, but a lot of people admit to distractions like eating while driving or using their phones, and 38% admit to feeling more impatient behind the wheel.
Mm.
More than 90% of people say that other drivers on the road are more aggressive, reckless, and drive faster than they did a year ago, and only 23% would rate other American drivers as very good or excellent.
That's really interesting. I'm not a good driver. You know, I'm a good driver, but everyone else is terrible, right? One of those kind of things.
14% of Americans say that they have been in an accident as a driver within the past year, and 61% say driving has become more stressful since last year.
There does seem to be a bit, like, there's times when I'm out there on the road and I'm like, wow, why are you so impatient? I mean, I'm going already above the speed limit, but you have to ride my tail until you can pass me, which is very not safe.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Especially on a dark road.
Or a slippery road like we have now, you know, in this this time of year when there's more ice and that kind of stuff. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
In the statistics, it's going to get you there, 30 seconds sooner?
Exactly. Right.
That's
because you got stopped at the next red light.
Exactly.
And I caught right up to you.
And that's always happens.
Yeah, it does.
Every single time. It never fails. I don't know how you fix something like this. I don't know how you rework society to, hey, we need you to slow down. Hey, we need you to not want things as fast. Because everything has pushed us in that direction. Mm-hmm. Business, marketing, everything kind of pushes you towards fast is better.
Yep.
Quicker is better. Mm-hmm. That's in our heads. That's in our head. Boom, boom, boom. And we got to go, and all this.
There's an easy fix for it, James. Mm. The 4-day work week.
There we go.
That
back.
Would be interesting.
People need more time that they are not just locked into work. Like that's our entire mentality. It's all we do.
Yeah. That's thinking outside the box. I like that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's an idea that I didn't think of and I like right away.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You're going to have less people on the roads. You're going to have more freedom, as Melissa touched on there, more freedom with your day to get things done. So you're not having
rush around. Yep.
You know, I think it's worth a shot. I think it's worth trying at the very least. Let's see how it goes. You know? I mean,
well, we need to do something radically different. Telling people, well, you need to leave earlier for work. Okay, but when am I supposed to get in my exercising, breakfast, getting the kids off to school, starting the laundry, making sure that supper is in the crock pot and ready to go because I have no time to get it ready when I get home and I have to pick up the kids after. You know, like there's just...
Exactly.
You can't leave earlier.
No,
so
no.
They're always running late.
Exactly. No, you 100%. 100%. I think another way we could help is more public transportation that's easily accessible to more people.
Yes.
That would keep less cars on the road. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that would help with, you know, the less cars, the better.
So, less congestion.
Exactly.
I genuinely think that... That public transportation thing for mm-hmm. rural areas like ours is mm-hmm. it's just a matter of time.
You know, I think it has to be. Yeah.
In Rapids here, we had an issue for about almost, I think, 30 years needing a new jail. And they kept kicking the can, and now it's going to cost a lot more than it would have if they had done it 20 years ago even,
right.
or 10 years ago even.
Yeah.
I feel like public transportation is the next one like that.
I agree.
A bus line or something like that is going to have to happen. It's one thing to see them in bigger cities or even in cities that neighbor big cities. That's not uncommon. I'm talking about places like Rapids and Nacoosa, mm-hmm. Plover, like even small towns with a population in the thousands are going to need public transportation.
I agree.
Well, and even having more transportation between big cities, you know, putting
yes.
in these rail lines that they're talking about, mm-hmm. having one run from Duluth to the cities, from the cities to Madison, from Madison to Chicago, like having those so that people can, you know, stop and park their car, jump on the train, ride into the city.
Mm-hmm.
That cuts down on traffic in the city, that would cut down on pollution, that would cut down on heat. I mean, there's so many things that would help with.
I 100% agree with you, Melissa. I just have one caveat because I would be more comfortable with Amtrak or something like that. It's a company that's a Midwest company. They you know, all these different things. Plus, with the rail thing, there was an episode of The Simpsons, Melissa, where they tried to bring a monorail to Springfield, and it did not go well. It did not go. No. In all seriousness, though, The Simpsons called it because none of these monorails get built. Like, all of these... there's like three or four. There's one of them in California. There's one here in the Midwest that they keep talking about. Oh, this is going to be the next transportation. This is going to be the next thing. And they get ahead of themselves. They have a bunch of ghost money in these things. And then it's just sitting there, not finished mm-hmm. because they didn't do it right.
When I said rail lines, I meant like trains.
I was just trying to make a joke.
Really. And I'm glad you pointed that out. It was funny.
We will take a break on that and come back with some more fun. We got plenty coming up for you here on the morning show. Before we go to break, I did want to mention something because I actually wanted to do something nice for Melissa. I'm joking. I'm kidding. No, actually, Mel, I wanted to shout you out because I really appreciated you sent an email out about the doctors endorse JJ clips, that email you sent
mm-hmm.
us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I wanted to give you a chance to touch on that with our audience, if you don't mind.
Oh, right now? Sure.
Yeah, if you want, not to put you on
Absolutely.
The spot here or anything. But
no, I attended the announcement that they did yesterday with that, where they had three doctors on a Zoom call, basically, and media and everybody was invited to attend to talk about why healthcare providers are supporting Janet Protasiewicz as the justice for Supreme Court in the race next week. And I was very appreciative of the doctor's candor with talking about the reasons for the need to support Janet and the need for someone who values people and people's health care to be in our highest Supreme Court. Mm. And Judge Protasiewicz has shared her values. She has been open with, and that's different than the law. But one of the things, and I was able to, at the end, ask questions, or everybody was able to ask questions, and I was able to ask about explaining what abortion health care is, because it's not just about aborting a baby. It's about, you know, when her water breaks and she's in her second term, that is called an abortion. When a woman has a miscarriage and when she's, you know, 2 months in, that is called an abortion. So the medical term abortion covers so much more than just, okay, I got pregnant on accident and I don't want this baby.
Mm-hmm.
it's a much broader subject than I think the average person understands. And I actually asked them, like, would it help if you changed the terminology? And all the doctors were like, no, that's a red herring. That is, that would totally, it's been called an abortion or a spontaneous abortion in medical terminology forever. So it that would just misdirect. We need to focus our attention on what is important, and that is giving doctors the ability to use whatever means necessary to protect the health of patients. And that includes the baby and the mother. But having these laws in place, like the 1849 abortion ban, it cripples doctors from being able to help women when they know eventually she's going to need the abortion care anyway, but they have to wait. They have to wait until she gets sick or until she's bleeding to the point, and that puts them at risk, that complicates things. And then these women have to try to find an alternative.
Please appreciate the reporting you're doing on this, Melissa. And also, Melissa put together a list for you to reach out to your representatives to talk with them. She put that whole list together. Appreciate all you did on that one. I posted it on the Facebook page this morning. So you can go ahead and find that on our Facebook page. Just type in your search bar, WFHR.com, and you have all of the information right there for you to be able to reach out to your representatives anytime.
And there is a link on there, too, for, because obviously our listening area extends further than just Wood County. So for all of the reps, there's a quick link to find your specific representative.
I appreciate you, Melissa. Nice work.
Yes, very good.
Great work.
Awesome.
We will take a break. We'll come back. We got any right stories, good stories of the day. We're even going to tell you our brackets. We're going to give you the numbers from our brackets.
Yep. Ooh, I have to look mine up.
It's all coming up right here on The Morning Show at WFHR, where we are a locally grown radio. Welcome back to The Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. 9:48 on the clock. Melissa, Seth, and James here with you. And we're going to get into some That Ain't Right stories, good stories of the day to wrap up our show. And one of those That Ain't Right stories is our bracket numbers.
Oh, no. I'm afraid. I'm very afraid.
Now, some of the gang around here did an NIT tournament. Next year, I'm getting in on that. I love the NIT. I didn't know that was going on. I did. But Randy is in lead with 15, along with Pam. They both have 15 for the NIT tournament.
Wow.
Beth has 13. Ooh. Terry has 10.
All right.
Nice.
For our NCAA brackets, Pam is coming in at 36, Beth at 40, Randy at 51, James at 53, Terry at 56, and Seth in the lead at 77.
What?
Whoa.
For a second year in a row, it's looking like Seth is going to win our WFHR bracket.
I seriously had no clue. I didn't know. Whoa. Okay. I'm floored.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting.
Wow.
I also don't think that's probably going to change very much because I don't know anybody who has anybody left in the tournament.
No. My last one was San Diego State. I said we'd get to the Final Four, which they did, but that's it.
Yeah.
I did not say they were going to advance any further, so I think I'm done. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I can tell you guys that I had 50 points.
Okay.
So I'm down there in the numbers, but I'm fifth place for the network wide. And Seth, you're in first because the person with the most points network wide is 60.
Whoa.
Wow.
I should have signed up for that one.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I didn't do that.
The max number of points you can get is 76, so you're quite up there, buddy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess
We're going to Atlantic City. We're going to Atlantic City.
No.
It turns out, didn't
this is
it?
The only luck I have. Don't even start, man.
Turns out Atlantic City, not what it used to be.
No.
Made the trip for nothing. That's fun. I hope people are enjoying the madness of March. I sure am.
Oh, wow.
I've been enjoying it. I hear a lot of people, there's no reason to watch, or this isn't exciting. Come on.
Ridiculous.
It's exciting. It's been exciting, I think. And if you are bored with the men's side, do yourself a favor and watch the women's Final Four.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Now, that's where you got the blue bloods. South Carolina is one of the most dominant teams in any sport I've ever seen in my life.
Undefeated this year so far.
Like men, women, it doesn't matter. Like, they're one of the most dominant teams I've ever seen. and they're going up against arguably the greatest shooter, one of the great, at least top five shooters in women's college basketball history. But I'll make the argument in college basketball history in Caitlin Clark. That watch a highlight reel of Caitlin Clark and tell me you don't want to watch her play every day. That kid is amazing. She's I was a big fan of Steph Curry when he was in college because he was so little, and yet he would hit these freak weird shots and everything. And I had no idea. Nobody had any idea he'd turn into what he is.
Yeah, right.
Caitlin Clark has this opportunity. She could be this for the women's game where she is just all over the map. One of my favorite things about an NBA game is watching where people took their shots and made shots, and they have that board that they show you of the ball and all that. Caitlin Clark's is all over the map. There is no guarding her. It'll be interesting to see how South Carolina plays her.
Especially South Carolina, which is known for their smothering defense.
Yes.
It's going to be a heck of a matchup between Iowa and South Carolina.
I'm telling you, the women's game, man, if you aren't on board, jump on. You got to get. We'll
start
welcome
now.
You on the bandwagon,
yep,
you know? Right. It's fun. It's been exciting. We get to some good, true That Ain't Right stories now. It's amazing how creative we can get to avoid paying for overpriced booze.
Okay.
a very similar thing with the snacks in the going to a movie.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
A woman in Australia named Alexandria Funnel is going viral after she posted a video from a Bon Iver concert this month. She and her friends didn't want to wait in line at the bar and overpay for drinks, so she bought a loaf of sourdough bread, hollowed it out, and hid a bottle of wine in it. But you can bring in sourdough bread?
I was going to say. Wait,
okay. The venue doesn't let you bring your own alcohol, but does allow food. So she knew security wouldn't bother checking. Her TikTok video shows her pouring a glass of wine from the bread while she and her friends laugh. She told a reporter they had already spent $200 on the tickets and wanted to save a little money. The bread didn't go to waste, by the way. She says that she took it home and made garlic bread after the show.
Oh, that's even better. Wait, that sounds more like a good story of the day. I don't think that's a That Ain't Right story.
Yeah, yeah. No, the That Ain't Right part is that the ticket price.
Oh, yeah.
The ticket price is the That Ain't Right part. I admire her, you know, her creativity.
Okay.
That we'll say here.
No disrespect to Bon Iver. I know who he is. He's he's a very talented artist. But if Bon Iver is charging that much for tickets, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah. Whew, that is creative, though.
Yeah, very
good.
This
one not as. A lot of suitcases look the same, so you may have stood at a baggage claim and worried that someone may get your bag by mistake. But someone could also take it on purpose. A man was arrested after he stole a suitcase from a baggage claim in Atlanta. And how would you find somebody that does something like this? How do you catch the culprit that does something that's the criminal mastermind that is smart enough to figure doing something? How do you get somebody like that? He was found because the owner of the bag had an AirTag tracking device in the suitcase.
Oh, jeez.
But if that didn't do it, maybe this did. The guy had been waiting for his bag to show up and it never did. So he looked at the AirTag and, you know, tells the security and they track this guy down. The next day, they found the person because he was wearing the other person's clothes.
What?
They confronted the thief and the police officer. They confronted him with a police officer, and at the time, the thief was wearing his shirt and jeans.
What?
Oh my goodness!
The owner got all of his stuff back, and the thief was charged with theft, unlawful removal of baggage, and trespassing. It sounds like he was just walking into the airport and took the bag, and it's unclear exactly what went down. For what it's worth, the airport claims there are officers there to prevent people from taking bags that aren't theirs. But if you fly regularly, you know that no one is closely monitoring who's taking the bag claim.
Not really, no.
What are the odds of... I want to know if the clothes fit him. Because obviously this is wrong. The man should be charged and everything.
Right.
But I would have to take a moment of being like, well, what are the staggering? I would want to know the math of him actually grabbing a bag and the clothes fitting
him. What are the odds? Yeah. Right, exactly.
And it being a man's bag.
Yeah,
exactly.
They do all look very similar. There's a lot of black standard size.
Yep.
Huh. Yeah, luggage bags.
Mm-hmm. Man. Man.
It makes you feel like...
this is why people take too big of bags and try to stick them in the overhead compartments inside the airplane so they keep their bag with them.
Right.
Going back to, I think, our Monday show.
Oh, man.
Interesting, yeah. That ain't right. That ain't right.
No, that's
taking other people's stuff is wrong in general, but especially taking somebody's luggage when they're out of town, when they're in a town that they're not living, they don't live in, or something like that.
That's particularly egregious, right? It does.
Feels like there should be an enhancer on that one.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? There should be a little bit extra on that. I don't know. That ain't right, I'll tell you that. We need a palate cleanser. We need a good story of the day, and we love local good stories. We like stories that involve our neck of the woods and that kind of thing. And we are going to go to the village of Oregon right now. And a story that Melissa Kay sent us, and again, a big shout out to Mel for this. Appreciate it, Mel. Melissa, I didn't know I needed a good start to the day myself, and I read the story as quickly as I could this morning, and I came into the show in a good spirits, I think in part because of
good.
It. The community in the village of Oregon is celebrating the grand opening of Culver's. It's official. The wait is finally over and the doors are open. Culver's co-founder, Craig Culver, held a grand opening ceremony at the new location. Says, "Welcome to Delicious," Culver said. It was only a few months ago the Oregon community got wind of a Culver's coming to town. Everybody wanted Culver's for years and years, village president Randy Gauss said. Dreaming of buttercups and fries, one man just couldn't wait any longer. Dana Taran took matters into his own hands and built his very own Culver's. I'm showing a picture of this to Seth right here.
Scale.
Yes, and it is just, if you could picture this in your head, basically if you were making a little Culver's for your kid.
Yep.
You know, for children or something.
I like the drive-up that they got going on there. Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Fan of Culver's. Did not know that.
Yeah.
In his little hot rod there. Yeah, very good.
Quote, "When the opportunity presented itself, we ran with it," Taran said. The parking lot at the grand opening was full. However, it wasn't nearly as busy as it appeared over the summer. So there is a plot of land that it looks like you could put like
it's an old parking lot, it looks like.
Yeah, yes. Next to some storage sheds.
That's what I was trying to think of. And just hundreds and hundreds, actually a lot more than that, of just toy cars,
1,500, yep.
Wow.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yes, I was just going to say, at one point more than 1,500 cars were parked in the lot. Those vehicles were just a tad bit smaller, though.
That's good.
Quote, "Everybody caught the joke and they brought dinosaurs or spaceships," Taran said. "Everything they had out there was people using their imagination. One by one, the parking lot of toys grew and grew. It seemed like the entire community got involved. Craig Culver even took a trip to see the growing line. They were, quote, they were so persistent about getting Culver's to Oregon," Culver said. "He joined in on the fun and placed a blue bus in line as well." "All of a sudden, it was almost 1,700 cars in line," he remembered. "I've got to say thank you to them. They built their excitement on this. And the restaurant broke ground in September and all the toys were donated."
Oh, wow. How cool.
But an interesting thing also happened in all this. Taran said it's now clear to him that it wasn't just about the food, but instead it became much bigger. Quote, "It brought everybody together. People that are divided between different things that want to do something in the community find something in common that they can really get fired up about.
How great is that?
Culver's unified people.
How about that?
Culver's brought people together. But in all seriousness, this is a great example of how easy it is to get people to get along, to get people to work together, to get people to just work and find some unity in our communities.
You got it, man. Right on.
Shout out to Dana and to the city of Oregon. Shout out to Craig Culver and, of course, our friends at Culver's who do great work and obviously work with us. And thank you, Melissa. Thanks for sending that.
Great story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And thank you for News Channel 9. I don't see the
I didn't see the reporter mentioned.
The
yeah.
reporter on here either, but it was their story, News 9, WOW, and the pictures are really cool.
Yeah, good stuff.
Just the tiny Culver's and all the cars. It really got me this morning. Like I said, James, dumb that it made me tear up. But
I hear you.
Good stuff.
You two have a great day.
You too.
Yeah, you too.
Melissa, have a good one. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Will do.
We got Morning Magazine coming up right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.